Thank you. Recordings have started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the 32nd GNSOE PDP team meeting taking place on the 6th of December 2018 at 1400 UTC. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you were only on the telephone bridge, could you please let yourselves be known now? Hearing no one, we have listed apologies from Aiden Federline, NCSG, Diane Plout, IPC, and Emily Taylor, the RRSG. They have formally assigned Tatiana Tropina and Lindsay Hamilton-Reed as their alternate for this call and any remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members' return date. As a reminder, the alternate assignment form must be formalized by the way of the Google assignment form. The link is available in the agenda pod in the meeting, in the agenda pod to the right, and also in the meeting invite. Statements of interest must be kept up to date. If anyone has any updates to share, please raise your hand or speak up now. Seeing or hearing no one, if you need assistance updating your statements of interest, please contact the GNSO Secretariat. All documentation and information can be found on the ePDP Wiki space. There is an audio cast and view only Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call. So please remember to state your name before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the end of the call. Thank you. I'll now turn this back over to our chair, Kurt Pritz. Please begin.
Great, thanks, Terry, and hi everyone. So we're 2 hours away from my favorite time of the week. So if you've already scanned down the agenda, there's a couple other items I want to cover today that I will in the up. So I think I'll just start with that. One is the very first thing is the outstanding action items, and I think there's two. Marika, they're kind of both on my plate, but do you want to mention those, Marika? Or you have
yeah,
anything, Marika? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm having some Adobe Connect issues, but I'm still on the phone. So the two that are outstanding are in relation to two messages that are supposed to be sent to ICANN org. First one regarding the data processing agreement with escrow providers, and the other one with dispute resolution providers. So I think those are still outstanding. And then there are as well a couple of people that indicated that they were interested in participating in the small team conversation on the controller-related questions that have not filled out the Doodle poll yet. So please do that as soon as possible so we can schedule that call.
Thanks very much. And so I'll take care of those notices, those write-ups with the questions to ICANN today or tomorrow, and we'll make sure they're out by the start of the week. Okay, so with that, there's three items I want to cover at the outset of the meeting. One has to do with the letter to the European Data Protection Board. So I don't know if you want to put up a version of that. Stephanie did some great work on that. Hadia added some thoughtful edits, and so did Cavus. And I think what's coming up here is, well, it's not the clean version, but close to the clean version of maybe so it's easier to read. I don't know what that comment says. I'm just making it bigger so I can see it. Okay, so could you, like, really quickly just take that comment off so it's bigger and easier to read, Caitlin? It's already small enough, so making it one-third again smaller is kind of makes it hard. So I have I have some comments to this and then a plan for getting it published. So first, this is going out over a minor Rafiq's name. So, with your indulgence, I'm going to make some final edits and to put it kind of in Kurt speak, because of it, you know, I just want to put it in my style, but I plan to change none of the substance, but I do want to run a few questions by you, and then after I make changes, I'll check those over with Stephanie as the primary author, and then also with Rafiq on this side. So that's what I plan to do, and I hope that's okay with everybody. I just had a couple of questions, and I want to go back to an email I wrote where I wanted to add a couple things, and I wanted to get your take on it. So I wanted to provide a notice that I don't think it's in here, but maybe it's in because I just read the last versions in the last few minutes. But, I wanted to let the Data Protection Board know we were working on this with all due care, but all due haste also, that this ICANN team is taking this up as a matter of urgency. I also thought we might point out that there's a summary in the initial report that's kind of easy to read, and that it's been translated into the UN languages, if that's helpful to them. I also thought we might point out that we do have legal questions, and we're seeking outside counsel and consultation with DPAs. And I also wanted to provide a notice that our final report would be forthcoming. So part of the reason for this is so the final report doesn't come as a surprise to them. So those were the additions I wanted to make, but they're not in this version, so I wanted to get some feedback on those. Ashley?
To answer your question, I don't really have any feedback on that. I was going to provide some other edits to the document. I'm happy to reserve those until you get responses to your questions, if that's more appropriate.
No, go ahead, Ashley. Please do.
Yeah, and I apologize. I'm having a hard time keeping up with all my emails lately. But I just wanted to propose, and it may have already been proposed and shot down, in the first paragraph where we're talking about the role of ICANN, and it now says something along the lines of ICANN is a global nonprofit organization responsible for ensuring the stable and secure operation of the Internet system of unique identifiers. I just wonder why we can't say the domain name system rather than unique identifiers. And the reason why I'm saying that is because when we start talking about unique identifiers and then spelling out, you know, protocol parameters, IP addresses, we really start confusing this with the IANA functions as opposed to ICANN's mission and domain name policy development. I just really would like that we stick to the domain name system as, if at all possible, as I think it probably includes what people are trying to refer to here anyway. Also, when we get to the second paragraph and we're talking about, I'm trying to find it. Hold on, let me pull up my notes. I'm sorry. It is the last of the first paragraph, and it's the sentence that is talking about ICANN to develop GDPR compliant policy to govern operation procedures relating to the processing of personal data by stakeholders in the domain name industry. Rather than saying stakeholders in the domain name industry, would it be possible to say instead here personal data by ICANN and its contracted parties? Because I think we're not really, there's no responsibility here beyond that, and I would hate to kind of muddy the waters by being less than precise. So basically just not referring to stakeholders and referring to ICANN and its contracted parties. And that's it. Happy to fight it out or whatever. Thanks.
Okay, just taking notes. Anyone else? I support those edits, and just would encourage I think that some of the language you mentioned was just lifted right out of the mission. So, but I think your edits are good. And so if anyone has I'm reading So, Stephanie, you and I, we'll talk about this and make some decisions. Mark?
Hey, Kurt. Mark Anderson for the transcript. I just wanted to clarify where we are with this letter. I guess my understanding, was, and, I want to make sure that it still should be, that we hadn't, as a working group, agreed that we definitively agreed that we will be sending this letter, and that this is more discussion. If we do send this initial letter, this is what it would look like. Is my understanding still correct? I think that's what the indication had been coming out of previous the small group calls and the previous updates that we were still had not definitively decided if this letter would be sent or not.
Thanks, Mark. I probably didn't do a good job introducing the topic because I was pulling some other documents together right at the start. So I think that's right, that we hadn't decided whether or not to send the letter, and the exercise was that we were going to beat the letter up some and stare at it and say this seems like an appropriate thing to do. So I think that's right. I'll also say something that I should have said at the outset, and that is that because this letter's been edited by a few people, there's a few typos in it, and we recognize that. So those will all be cleaned up before we send it out.
Okay. Thanks.
So I think that's right. And in the email I sent with comments about the letter, I'll say that after thinking about it quite a bit, I think it's appropriate to send a letter. I really like the idea of keeping it to one page and to show that we can be succinct and to the point and communicating very few points that we think are important to the Data Privacy Board.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying. I just wanted to make sure that was still the case, and I'll say for my part, I think I've heard from some people that think sending this letter is a good idea, some people that think it's not, and at this point I sort of find myself in the middle. I think there's arguments to be made on either case, and I guess I want to with that being the current case, I want to make sure we have an opportunity as a working group to deliberate and come to a proper decision on that. So thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. James?
Thanks, Kurt. James speaking. I agree with Mark. I think throughout the editing process, there was a presumption that the more we edited this, the presumption that we would be sending it grew, and we never really explicitly as a group made that decision. I think that to address Mark's point, I think that the benefits of sending this are in doubt or in question, but I think we have eliminated the potential harms by through the editing process, and I think it's probably for lack of a better word, it's a safer letter now. It essentially just notifies the EDPB of the of the initial report publication and invites them to comment, and so I don't really see any harm in sending the letter. So I would just ask Kurt and others on the call if we can come out of this call with that as a concrete decision one way or the other. I think that would be a good outcome for the next 2 hours. Thanks.
Thank you, James. Georgios?
Yes, hello. I was not on the second discussion. There was, if I remember well, two calls. And I remember in the discussion that we said that as it was the initial draft and as the questions were formulated, we couldn't see that we would get some answers, at least what we wanted. However, what I see in the current draft, and I think I said it last time, is, and this is in the last paragraph, that in a sense we are waiting from the European Data Protection Board to provide comments in general. And I think this is a wishful thinking. This will not happen. If this letter is the purpose of sending this letter now, as it is now, it's just to inform the European Data Protection Board that we are doing, we published the report, that we have advanced some of the issues that were discussed in the previous communication with ICANN. I think, yeah, I see no harm, but I see no value either at this point. For me, and I think I said it in the first meeting, sending something more precise and more accurate would probably give us some shortcuts to questions that are contentious between the group. But if we don't have the material in a good and the questions are in a ripe condition to send those questions, I think we shouldn't do it. We shouldn't do it at this point. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Sergio. That's thoughtful, and so you know, I think it was the sense of the group that. We have questions that need to be answered, but they should be answered by others. Everybody recognized the same thing you did, is that it's not likely that they're going to read the initial report and comment on it. And additionally, they're likely not to receive specific either or type questions we have very well, and that we should seek other avenues for getting them answered. And that's what we decided to do with the retaining of legal counsel and perhaps consulting with DPAs. I've lost the cue, but I think it's Caboose. Caboose, go ahead. How are you?
Yes, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody. I also did some edits. First of all, I thank Stephanie and Haida for their works, and I add some edits. So this is my professional activity that I do many, many letters per day for this type of thing. But I don't see anything in our letter which is interesting. We just humbly, and with a lot of courtesy, saying that what the ICANN is, what the EDP is, and what the GNSO is, and then what the GDPR, and then saying that please look at our reports. Why we need to formally write a letter to the body to inform them, please look at our report. EU has representatives with us. They can raise it. And if they have any question or any comments, they will raise it. So I don't see any point in the letter. The letter is very poor and almost empty. So I have difficulty to send that, but you could keep it in the archive after the later stage. Maybe you could find some other interesting elements, if some people allow to send those elements, questions, specific questions, you do that. Even though somebody says that they are so selfish that they don't want to be questioned by individual and they consider ICANN as individual, so in that case, we don't send anything at all. If somebody doesn't want to talk with us, we don't want to talk to them. So that is the situation. But if everybody agrees that we need to send them, we need to send them something useful. This letter has nothing inside that except saying that please read our reports. They are part of public comments, public people. Why do you have to remind them? Why you don't remind others? Thank you.
So Caboose, before I let you go, I have two questions for you. One is, were you suggesting that instead we notify the GAC EU rep? And let him know so that he can tell people through channels, he or she can tell people through channels
what's going on? And my second question is, you know, what would make, in your opinion, what would make the letter meaningful but still appropriate?
My answer to your first question is, we have representatives from the EU, and they could remind them that there is an initial report. If you have missed to read that, please read that and make a comment like other people. That is the answer to the first question. Second question, if you want to ask European Data Protection Board, as a board, we need to have a valid questions. Questions that we need to raise and ask their comments. In this letter, I don't find any questions. So should we have any questions, please put it in the letter and send it. But this is conditional, because some people, they told in your small team meeting that the board does not want to receive any questions. If they don't want to receive any questions, why we send them? So in summary, in conclusion, don't send anything for the time being unless everybody agrees that there is a valid topic that we need to ask a specific comment or comments from the board of the data protection. Thank you.
Any perspectives on Cavus's comment? And Georgios, maybe you want to come back to respond. Should we be working this through the GAC and you as the EU rep, or?
Thanks, Kurt. If I can briefly respond from what we know so far on how to approach the board, and there was a certain, already with ICANN, what we know, there was a certain fatigue on the issue with this official letter. So my position was not to have a formal letter exchange with the board. And also the board was, and this is what I was understanding from the reactions, is that as long as we don't have something specific and very, very to the point question describing also the whole process, then they will not make general comments. They will not say, this is what I'm saying. We are not in a position now. We don't have the right questions or the right queries to address to the board. And this is referring to what we have in the letter currently. We will not get any response because we don't ask them anything specific. I don't think even they will look at the report. Maybe they will. Some DPAs that are more close to the issue, they will have a look. But I'm not expecting anything in the current formulation as we have it in the letter to have any added value, as I said before, from the European Data Protection Board. I'm more inclined to see whether there is an informal way to ask DPAs, even specific DPAs that are more into the issue, but again with specific questions. And there we are not yet. I mean, we don't have any formulated the right questions to get the right answers. I see a value there, but we are not at all in this format that we have now.
Thanks very much. That was really thoughtful. So I want to get a sense of the room here. So, you know, I'm not, you know, clearly as you guys know me, I'm not from that world, but from what my world as a manager, my thinking was this, that somebody in the chat said the Data Protection Board is very busy. So for me, if I'm creating this work product that's pretty intense, I don't wait and I don't wait to the very end to tell the customer about my work product and say, here it is, and then they're surprised and they look at it and
you know, may like it or may find fault with it. So as manager, and the word manager includes, you know, managing expectations, I think the letter has value in that we're saying, look, we're working on this. We've done our initial report. The final report's coming. You're free to look at it if you're so inclined. I think that provides us some degree of, covers too strong a word, but, you know, we've gone to some effort to say, hey, we're working on this and we're halfway through and here's our work product so far, so that when a final report comes out, it's not a surprise and, you know, we have a way to say, you know, we showed you our work halfway through. So I see that as the value of the letter, but my ego's not tied up in it at all, and I'd be perfectly fine to, you know, write to the GNSO and say, you know, we've listened we've got some really valuable feedback from some of our members, and we think it's inappropriate to write to the Data Protection Board at this time. You know, what do you think, GNSO? So I'm for either thing. I just don't want to rule out. So let's use our hands up and down thing. What kind of option do we have? Do we have green and red? So if you want to send the letter out, check agree. And if you don't want to send the letter out, hit disagree. And let's see what happens. Well, this is great. Can anybody count higher than three? Okay, so 6-6, pretty darn good. Stephanie, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 9, 10. All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read my Skype messages. Yeah, more reds than greens. So I'm going to... Nonetheless, I'm gonna touch up this letter so we have it in our back pocket because I think we're 90% done. Some good work's gone into it, and I want to have it ready. And then I'm gonna write to the GNSO Council, and or maybe ask Rafiq to do it. I'm gonna write to the GNSO Council with Rafiq's good advice and say we're gonna hold off on sending this letter right now, and but not preclude sending it in the future as we have a, you know, so get some feedback from the council, and we can even provide, you know, a draft of this letter. So if that's okay with everybody, we'll leave this agenda item behind. And, you know, I think it was a really good discussion, and I'm sorry I took up so much of our valuable time, but I guess it was necessary. Okay, the next update item is the SOW, the Statement of Work for Legal Counsel that I just sent around that Stephanie and Diane worked on. Diane and Stephanie worked on over the last 48 hours for us. So if you would put that up, you haven't had a chance to look at this. I'm going to give you a chance to read it. I'm going to provide some initial feedback, and that is what Diane and Stephanie suggest here is the scope, and then they provided two sample questions to provide an idea of the type of questions we would be asking. So you know, I haven't had too much of a chance to read it, even though it came out last night, I think. So I have, you know, you can scan through it, and then, you know, we'll take comments online. But, at the end of the day, I think what's going to be sent out is going to be massaged some by ICANN. So I think we need to realize that. And And so we'll not be too worried about wordsmithing. Even the sample questions are just samples and to not be answered, but just our exemplars. The changes I'd make to this is I really want to manage the expectation of those that bid on it. So I view this as sort of a not a pay so much per month, but really we're buying these services by the pound, right? So we have questions, and we have this we'll have a process where we'll compose questions, send them, the law firm will respond in writing, and then if need be, we can have a conference call later to iterate the answers and make sure we have a clear understanding of what's going on. So I want to manage the amount of time spent by us and by them and the expense by creating that sort of process in this. So while they may be on call for 5 months, there's certainly going to be a period of a flurry of initial activity that we hope will go asymptotically to zero pretty fast, and that the retainer will be used up as they spend time and actual time working on things and not as some sort of monthly fee. So I want to make that clear in there, and then I think it's pretty clear, but I want to make it clear too that the sample questions are just samples and to indicate the sort of expertise we're looking for. So I'll pause for a minute and see if there are any questions about this. Caboose, I'm going to assume that's a former hand and go to Ashley. So please go ahead, Ashley.
Yes, Kurt. I think contrary to the previous one, this is an important data. I don't know at what stage this draft is. I received it 3 minutes before the meeting. Perhaps I was lazy. I have not opened it before, but I have not studied it. I just give a very quick look, 2 or 3 minutes. But I think the content of this letter is very important. We should look at that very carefully because it seems some sort of the scope of the activity and work that we expect from the counsel or law firm. So we should be quite careful of that. I don't have any specific proposal at this stage, but perhaps you should ask people, maybe one from each constituency or maybe some other people, to look at them quite carefully to see whether there is any need to have an edit to that, because we should be quite clear what really we expect from that, because this 4 or 5 months, in fact, will be less than 5 months because we have to finalize the thing before that 5.5 months. So I suggest that if you and all the distinguished colleagues agree, we just think it over a little bit, sleep on that for 1 or 2 days or a few days, and then try to finalize that as everybody is comfortable with the content of the letter and the views of everybody is satisfied. And that is a suggestion that I make. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. And you're right. I sent it out just before the meeting and with the idea that you would review it after this meeting and come back with comments. I'll also say that for me anyway, SOWs are sort of like conversation starters, right? You want to find the right firms with the right level of expertise and then get into a negotiation where the final statement of work and the fees and all the negotiations are tightly honed. So I agree that we have to be, we have to read this carefully and get it out, but also realize, it's a conversation starter for ICANN to get the right people on board. Now, Ashley, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. Having been on at least one of the calls where this conversation got started, I am still not 100. Well, I like the idea of getting some kind of neutral, informed guidance other than through the formal Data Protection Board channel. I'm still not 100% convinced that procuring services is going to best serve us. In large part, I think folks have already indicated the cost, but also the process of actually the time that it takes to procure services. And I would just hate to find ourselves in a situation where we spend a lot of time and potentially monetary resources and don't really get much out of it. So I just wanted to flag that there. Also, when looking at the Sal I will have to look at it again more clearly or more in a more detailed fashion, because I do think that there's some improvement that needs to happen with the questions. And I thought we had indicated the need to add more to this. But I think something else that would be helpful if we do go down this route, whether it's, you know, procure legal services or something else, is that we make it clear that we expect them to refer back to the guidance we've already received from Working Party 29, as well as through the European Data Protection Board, because I think there's a lot there already. I think we have a lot of information that's been provided to us. It's just, you know, we haven't really maybe necessarily been able to use it the way we should have been doing, or perhaps we have some differences of opinions, and being able to benefit from someone with more of a GDPR legal expertise would be able to sort it out for us. Because I think we have quite a bit of information available to us, and I think it would be unfortunate if we second-guessed that information, because I think it was pretty spectacular that we got that kind of feedback, and we shouldn't throw that out. Thanks.
Thanks, Ashley. I think that's right. But I think the exercise of really honing our question is will be helpful to us going through that exercise, as it will be in getting the answers. I also want to point out in the second small group meeting we had on this, Thomas Rickard did point out some advice we got from the Data Protection Board that seemed very vague to us that we need clarification on. So there do exist questions where I think we will want some outside advice. Mark?
Hey, Kurt. Mark Anderson for the transcripts. I like the others. I didn't get a chance to read this before the call, so we'll do that and comment appropriately. But I raised my hand because there's a conversation going on in chat around budget implications, and I think maybe that's maybe important that we bring that to the forefront. If the working group decides that this is important and we need independent counsel, I think we need to make sure this can be paid for. Christina pointed out, if money's an issue, the GNSO Council has asked, what we need. And if there are issues here with how we're going to pay for it, let's raise that to the forefront now. I think there's probably somewhere money to be had for paying for this. And so if we determine that this is what we need, let's make sure we can pay for it and make sure, if there's red tape or hurdles to getting this paid for, let's bring that to the forefront now so that we can we can get that addressed. As others have mentioned, if we need this, we're going to need it quickly, and so I'd hate for us to spin our wheels with red tape getting this paid for.
Thanks, and I would hope. Thanks very much. That's a good comment, and I would hope that my job and Rafiq's and certainly the support staff is to navigate all that stuff, and certainly we wouldn't spend money. We don't have to, even if we have the budget, and we would not do something we absolutely have to do because of a budget issue. So I think we walked that line pretty well, and part of this effort is to demonstrate, one, to ICANN that we really need it, and two, is to demonstrate we're doing it in the skinniest way possible and still get what we need. Margie, please go ahead.
Sure, this is Margie. A couple observations. One, what's the process for actually selecting the council, and will there be a question regarding whether they've already provided advice to, contracted party or other party in the ICANN stakeholder model? So I think that may affect the analysis provided. And also, is this list of questions, I'm not sure how we got this, has someone gone through the initial report to glean out all the areas where there were questions, and how do we add to it? Because I imagine there's other questions we might ask.
So the process is that ICANN procures the services. They will go through a process where they look at potential they solicit potential vendors, interview them, the typical procurement stuff. They have an expedited process for doing that, as they have done for us in the past. I think that to try to answer your real question, I hope, is that if you think there are certain prerequisites or experiences that should be required of this firm in order to do the things we need them to do, such as working in this multi-stakeholder model before or providing certain types of advice before, a certain experience, now, I might ask you to add those to the SOW to make sure that those really valid concerns are addressed. So that's answer number one. And then the answer number two, I think, is that the thinking in putting these questions in there was that we'd show them some examples or exemplars of the type of question that we would ask. So it's not supposed to be an exhaustive list. It is just meant to illustrate the level of complexity of the question. I'm not saying they're particularly complex. I'm just saying that, it's meant to demonstrate the sorts of things we're interested in. So it's only an example. We're not asking for answers to these questions at this point. And so I think the SOW has to be, triply clear on that these are just exemplar questions.
Sure. And if I could reply,
yeah.
It's hard to find a counsel that understands the industry and hasn't already weighed in on this. I'm just trying to, I'm not sure, I'm saying they're completely off the table, but I think knowing that they've represented, a contracted party or not, or someone else that's active in the industry, I think at least helps, inform, whether they have a particular perspective, and, you may or may not still go with them, because if you can't find someone, you can't find someone. But at least we're going in knowing that they've already provided advice in this area for, a registry or a registrar, as an example, I think understanding our industry is actually really important, so that you may end up with those folks. But I just think it's something we need to ask.
Thanks, Margie. Cavus?
Yes, as I said before, I have not read the paper quite carefully, but a quick look again while the other people are talking. I think the question one is part of question two, sorry. Question two is a subsidiary part of question one. I think we have an experience before, whenever there is something of legal status or legal nature, we need to raise it with someone outside to have a fresh look from the outside point of view. We did that during the CWG, cross-community working group on naming, and during the CCWG work stream one, when we had legal questions. But we should also consider that these legal people, I don't know, they are expensive people, and they'll cost a lot of money. Even though we have the budget, we should not spend the budget without any reasons. Budget could be remained and could be appropriated to elsewhere. Nevertheless, the question one for me, for the time being, is fitted to be a question if it's further developed and so on and so forth. But I believe that it may be early at this stage to raise these questions. We have to wait until we receive the public comments, which is the 20th of December, so maybe about 5th of January or 10th of January, we have clear answer from the public about these sort of the things, the natural and the legal, and if the legal has a representative, it could be the natural person, and if information is not correct or is considered to be not correct, what we have to do. So I think we have to wait. But once again, I think we have to look at the question, and we have to put it in the proper order, whether question two is a part of question one or not, and then wait until we receive some answer. Maybe some of the answer help us. But I don't believe that they are all answers available, as Ashley mentioned. There are some. There are no. There are different views, different people. So we have to find it out. And we have different, you know, in the CWG or CCWG, we have different views and so on and so forth. And that would be good to raise the question once it's approved by the group. So I am not against sending this, but I suggest that perhaps we should wait until we receive information on the public comments. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it'd be Caruso, I think it'd be dangerous to wait that long, because there's going to be a process by which, you know, we solicit, you know, it'll take time to get somebody on board, and we'll want to be asking them questions right away. So that's a balancing we'll have to do. I'm also kind of thinking about it, because I've just seen this too. You know, I'm sort of a proponent for putting in some sample questions, because, you know, just putting in, you know, we need EPDP or we need GDPR expertise or something like that is broad. And if sample questions can help identify an appropriate service provider, I think that'd be helpful. Thomas, I think it makes the SOW more meaningful. Go ahead, Thomas. How are you?
Good. How are you, Chris? Hi, everyone. Two quick points. One, I think in the letter, there's one component that I would like to see added, and that is that the advisor should provide some training on or coaching on methodology. You know, specific questions might lead to specific answers. We should, you know, as we tried with the various test questions that we've done for the worksheet, we need somebody to do sanity checks on that we're covering all areas that need to be covered for, you know, somebody to be able to establish that we have made the system compliant. That's one. The other point is on costs. And while it is true that, you know, any legal counsel that we retain will produce costs, I see biggest cost risk in us seeking legal advice from an independent counsel, and I can org that is seeking legal advice in parallel, and then we might end up with contradictory or, you know, inconsistent advice, probably during the drafting phase of our report, but maybe also during the phase where the board is checking whether or not they should adopt our report. And I guess that could easily double the cost or even enter into a battle of legal expert opinions that we solicit. So maybe this is something that's difficult for Trang or Dan to respond to now, but I think the most cost-efficient way would be if ICANN.org and this team could agree on asking just one independent counsel and then taking their advice for what it should be, right? And not enter into competing or soliciting various legal opinions that might be conflicting.
Boy, sorry, I was on mute. Boy, I think that's a terrific point, Thomas, and something that we should explore. Alan Woods.
Thanks, Kurt. I was about to do a mini moan there, and then Thomas came along, gave that brilliant suggestion. So I like that concept, and I certainly would like to think more about that. But I think my point is just the conversation that we're having now. Can I just suggest that we perhaps move it to the list at this point, because we're already 50 minutes in the meeting. I know this is important, but a lot of us haven't really digested what is in that letter, and I think we should just read it first. And I think we should probably jump a little bit into the substance, because we're coming up to an hour left and we have a lot to get through today. So apologies, it was a mini moan, but also, well done, Hans. You kind of took the wind out of my sails.
Yeah, see, it was worth it. Go ahead, Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. I just wanted to respond to the comment of that we should defer this. Past experience says if we end up needing counsel that ICANN does not currently have a business relationship with, it can take significant time for ICANN to do all of its due diligence and paperwork. So we really can't defer in starting the process. We can defer asking questions, but we can't defer in starting the process. Thank you.
Thanks. So let's take Alan Wood's suggestion. If you have other concrete suggestions to make to this statement of work, and I have a few, please add them. And then unless somebody thinks it's a really bad idea, I'm going to take Thomas' suggestion and write that in the cover letter that would go with the statement of work that we sent to ICANN. And so Stephanie's still voting no, so I don't know if she's voting no on what I just said or something we said a long time ago, but let's move that to the list. And so please give your input on the statement of work. And I understand that we've taken up a lot of time, but I think they were not substantive, but important discussions to have. Amar, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Amar. Just a quick question on, do you envision a deadline of sorts by which we should be done with the SOW, or at least by which time we should be introducing proposals on how to add topics to it?
Yeah, thank you very much. I bet you if I look at Skype, Marika is asking me to make the same suggestion. So I'd like input on the SOW by the end of the week. So we have today and tomorrow. And then we can polish it, put it in a draft form and send it to ICANN. And that still gives us the right to amend it, but I want to get the process going. And like I said, I view the SOW as kind of a conversation starter. So we won't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, but I think we heard several good comments on the discussion so far, and I'm sure we'll get more thoughtful comments and email. So thanks for that question, Al. All right, so let's go to the next thing in the agenda, which is Purpose O. And Benedict asked me to take up the first 20 minutes of the meeting, so he would be able to speak after that. I exceeded his expectations. We asked the team to provide some feedback on this on the list, and we've got essentially none. So this it's kind of like the O for orphan purpose, because it's kind of late coming, and then there's not a lot of passionate discussion about it. I do have some questions, but Benedict, I know you've introduced this in the past, but if you could briefly introduce it, flesh out a little bit of the detail if you can, anticipating what questions we might have, and then we have to come to a decision whether or not we want to include this amongst our purposes for processing data. So Benedict, if you could take that, and then we want to decide whether we toss this, adopt it as a purpose, or have to do more work. Go ahead, Benedict.
Hopefully you can hear me okay. You can I think thanks so much for covering the first 50 minutes, everyone. I think we did really well there. Why have I proposed a purpose O? The answer is that ICANN does internal stuff with registration data, like compliance, that's covered by purpose F, that we don't kind of have covered elsewhere in the in our report right now. It's the kind of activity I'm talking about is research to write reports, so looking at longitudinal trends in domain name registrations, and looking for and more tactical research on security, so things. Where ICANN is going to be in the position of being able to sort of look across domain names, particularly as it seems that ability is going to be not be available through the likes of domain tools and so on and so forth. We've we kind of from the security side, we mourn their loss, but we also understand that, you know, this is a new world. So I think that creating a purpose for ICANN to achieve this kind of research reflects what happened before the 25th of May, and it's something that's required within ICANN to deliver some of its work and support its mission. There are two ways that Thomas and I chatted about the sort of legal side of things. There are two ways of going about this under GDPR. You're allowed, you're essentially, an organization is permitted to do research in a really broad way as what's called secondary processing. And that's not something we've really talked about yet on this group. So we can take registration data, personal data that's been collected for another purpose, and then without getting subsequent consent, there are some areas that where secondary or subsequent processing is allowed without having to go and get consent of the subject again. And that's dealt with by Article 6.4, and this specific research exemption is Recital 50. So if anybody wants to go and look those things up, Article 6.4 and then Recital 50. So this is something we can do without a specific purpose, and that ICANN is allowed to do. But in the interest of transparency, Thomas and I think I'm characterizing him correctly, eventually decided that it would be better to have a separate purpose so that it's completely clear to registrants where the data is going to be used. And it's a really limited, and just coming on to the lawful basis, so it would still be under 6.1F, and the kind of data that would be processed would be extremely limited. We'd purely be talking about a limited set of pseudonymized data, and again, this would be open for discussion, but probably email address, we've put registrant name, address, and email, but those would be securely hashed. Separately, ESSAC have also developed a secure hashing function to demonstrate this as a proof of work, I'll circulate that to the list now so you can have a play and put your own email addresses in there. But basically, you put an email address in and you get a hashed version out. And to be very clear, this data would not be shared anywhere beyond ICANN. This would purely be for ICANN's internal work. I hope that's clear. So on that, I've probably forgotten a few things, but so please give me some questions, and hopefully you'll hear me. I think I can hear Fazana saying I'm whispering, and I hope you can hear me okay.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Thanks, Benedict. Let's hear the questions, James.
Thanks, Kurt. James speaking, and thank you, Benedict, for teeing this up, this conversation, and I think you offered some important clarifications there at the end. So just so I'm 100% clear, this purpose would be for ICANN to collect the data for research purposes. And then that data would not necessarily be shared with third parties, but the results or findings of the research would be shared. Am I understanding that correctly? The data would not be shared, but the findings would be shared. And is that a function or a role that ICANN is willing to take and is looking to take? And I guess then I turn the question away from Benedict and now point it squarely at Dan and Trang. Is that, you know, is that a case and a justification that ICANN, the organization, believe is part of their mission and they would like to undertake that role? So those are just my questions. And again, if I've missed something, I apologize, but I'm just trying to get a handle around the results. Thanks.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Kurt. This is purely for disclosure to ICANN and in a pseudonymized way.
this would, the idea is, and some of the language I just discussed with Farzaneh would be, is about research and publish reports. So in other words, so ingest the data, pseudonymized only, and publish on, so publish open reports on threats to the DNS. So yes, absolutely, it would be intended for, it would be intended, the output of this process would be intended for public consumption, but there would be no disclosure there. Dan, I have spoken to Dan about this, and he's the people he needs to speak to are mostly within Okto and SSR, so that's folks like John Crane and Dave Conrad, and I happen to know they're just on their way back from Moscow right now, and so Dan hasn't had a chance to speak to them yet. So he has got back to me about this. He hasn't taken a decision, or ICANN hasn't taken a decision collectively. I need to be very clear. I am to some extent creating this purpose so that ICANN can continue doing its work. This is by no means the only way to achieve this goal, but it seems to me to be the most transparent way to achieve research, to be clear to registrants about what's required, and to bind the work, to make sure that it's not too wide. So I noticed that Arma has said, how can we make sure that it's guaranteed that it only is only used for research, and that's what we use GDPR for. It's the risk of fines that guarantees that. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much, Alan Greenberg speaking. Given that we are working in a different environment where we no longer will have the public data available we used to have, given that it is ICANN's responsibility to look at the identifier system, and that includes evolution of the identifier system, and to consider risks to that identifier system, I don't see how we cannot do this. I would think whether there is a need on the books today that says they must have this, and whether they have done it before, I think is quite irrelevant, because the world we were looking at before was very different, and the data was available without asking anyone's permission for it. I don't see how we can restrict ICANN from doing this, or even attempt to. And as Benedict pointed out, we might be able to do it anyway under the current procedures, you know, even if we don't have an explicit purpose. But I agree that it should be there, and it should be blatantly clear that ICANN does have a responsibility to ensure that things are okay in the future and understand the environment well. And I don't see how we could tie its hands behind its back by saying it can't do this. So I really think it's a no-brainer that there's no question we have to be able to do this. I would also presume, but I ask for clarification, that if we do this, this also would allow ICANN, under appropriate non-disclosure, to subcontract some of this work, if that's appropriate. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Benedict, do you just want to manage the queue, and then you can choose when to respond or when to go ahead?
Sure. James, is that a current hand? Is that a follow up on your question?
All hands.
Okay.
Sorry, I saw it disappear. I'm using my phone, so apologies. I'm a little slow on the uptake. Cavus, I've seen you've written in the chat. You've asked a question about the secondary purpose. Would you like to clarify your point, please?
Excuse me, are you asking me to clarify? I heard somebody say second purpose. I said that what is the secondary purpose? Thank you.
Thanks for asking the question. This is something new to this group as a concept. But it's something I've been reading about. Essentially, there are certain limited exemptions in GDPR where you can take the data that is processed, that has been collected, processed for other reasons, and repurpose it without going back to the data subject and ask for their permission. So you're allowed to, normally, as you guys know by now, you know, you've got to say what you're using the data from, and you can't switch horses midstream. God, that was a terrible mixed metaphor. You can't switch horses mid-race. But there are certain exemptions, and research is one of them, where you're allowed to go back. You're allowed to take that data and perform research with it without going back to the data subject. That's what we mean by secondary purpose. And so when I'm talking about that, this is an alternative way of achieving this end. So I'm opening up to you guys to say, look, we can do it with a separate purpose. I can feel comfortable doing this anyway, but the reason I've proposed this is I think this is more transparent. Thank you. Cavus, have you got any further questions to that, or can I move on to Mark, please?
Yes, I'm not sure that this sort of action you mentioned would not have some unintended and unforeseen consequences and be a way to have some cooperation of something that somebody decides that this is a secondary purpose and decide not to comply with what is for the, what one would say, a primary purpose and so on and so forth. You try to create a sort of category which will be exempted from some actions, or in fact would have some relaxations, which I have difficulty for that, because that may cause problem with those who are not subject to this sort of action. So this so-called secondary purpose issue may create problem for the primary, because secondary is not subject to certain rules, subject to certain restrictions, and certain, it is subject to some exemption, and that may create difficulty. So I am not against, but I'm not sure that this is saying that we fully understand and we could address that. So that is the issue. But I raised my hand not because of this, because I raised the question in the chat, but I have another question about what we are talking about, this new data that I can be used for research or so on and so forth. I have some difficulties with that. If the court allow me, I say that I am not in favor of that. If I can or anybody wants to use any data for any case outside the GDPR, it is under its responsibility, and we should not intervene, and we should not justify or give any justification for the actions to be taken. Otherwise, you will be responsible. The team will be responsible that provided this sort of justification, which I think we are not authorized to do that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Cavus. Perhaps you could have a read of Articles 6.4 of GDPR, and you'll see how this processing is justified. Alan, you seem to have jumped to the front of the queue. If you feel that's your rightful position, crack on, please.
So I think, Benedict, I think you're looking at a different queue than I. I don't know if it's the interface or what, but I see Mark as being, Mark Anderson being next in the queue. So if you want to go ahead, Mark, that'd be great.
Sorry, Kurt. Thanks.
That's all right.
Thanks, Kurt and Benedict. Mark Anderson for the transcript. I have a number of comments, I guess, but, I want to focus on, something that, I guess Thomas raised initially and Ashley pointed out in chat, that it's, the purpose, it isn't clear what ICANN wants or needs, and it gives pause. I'm sort of semi-quoting Ashley there. And that's sort of, the initial point I think I want to make on this one. When Marika forwarded the Purpose O document around, she also provided the responses from ICANN.org on the use of registration data by other ICANN departments. And I read through, their responses to, questions 2 and 3 there. And from reading their responses, it's not at all clear to me that this purpose solves an actual problem or is something that ICANN is asking for. And I think before I would even support considering Purpose O, I think we would have to hear very specifically from ICANN what they need and why they need it. And in my view, this, you know, Purpose O, you know, is this is a, you know, you're making up something new here. And this is not something that's currently being done. This would be a new obligation on contracted parties to take registration data, anonymize it, and transfer it to ICANN.org. And it's not at all clear to me that that's necessary for GDPR compliance, that ICANN is asking for it, that this is within the remit of this working group or something that we should even be talking about right now. And so, you know, I guess, you know, Kurt asked when he teed this up whether this is, you know, something we scrap or decide to discuss further or decide is something we need as a purpose. I'm not seeing anything in here that makes me think this is something we need as a purpose.
Thanks, Mark. Mark S.
Thanks, Mark S. V. For the record, two questions and maybe a following question, depending on the second. So the first one, my comment would be, you know, knowing that we don't have to get subsequent notice from the data subject in some cases, it feels a little too clever to me. Why can't we just disclose that we're going to be doing this processing at the time of collection anyway? It seems like it will, you know, should we accept this, it'll become a typical thing that ICANN engages in. So feels to me like we should just disclose it right at the time of collection. And then the second question is about the pseudonymization. Is this an ad hoc pseudonymization, or are we generating globally unique identifiers? Because I think that, and then that, the answer to that goes to my third question. So please clarify.
So to clarify on your first point, my proposal does not rely on secondary processing. I'm suggesting that we've got two ways to approach this, and the way I'm proposing it is the transparent way, where we're upfront and clear about this to the data subject initially. But as I pointed out, there is no need to do that under GDPR, because there is a broad exemption for research. So I think we're agreeing with one another.
We are agreeing. Second, thank you for clarifying that. Yeah.
Okay, so on the second point, there is no sense of globally unique identifiers here, because this is we are purely creating pseudonymized data for internal use within ICANN. So there is no, so you can play with the pseudonymization tool that one of my SAC colleagues built for fun, that I've just put on the chat, HMAC Hasher. You can go and have a look at that and see what sort of results it uses the Wadley secret key, I love bacon. So that's his secret key there. So that prevents anyone reversing the data. Obviously, you don't use that key in practice. It allows data to be passed to ICANN without disclosing anyone's personal data. We're not talking of a public service here. Also,
okay,
I don't
read
bacon. What's your third question?
Third question would be, okay, I guess I would call this ad hoc pseudonymization. So it seems to me like among the types of research that would be conducted by this, the ARS would not be supported by this. Is that correct?
ARS is not an opto function, and so we'd need to either include GDD, who are the owning body in this purpose, or we'd need to create them a separate purpose. I don't know how the group wants to approach that. I think it's one to ask GDD about.
Okay, thank you for clarifying all my questions.
All right, let's draw a line under the queue. I think I know where we're going here, so there's a good chance we're going to learn something new. So please go ahead, Alan.
Thank you very much. 2 points. Now, on the secondary purpose usage, I'm not sure that applies in this case. I mean, legally it applies, but it really seems to be designed for a case where the controller already has the data and just chooses to use it for a secondary purpose. In our case, we don't have the data, and applying the secondary purpose rationale, we would have to then convince essentially all of our contracted parties to provide the data for us on that secondary purpose, and we've already heard things such as what Mark Anderson said, that there could well be pushback. So since we don't have access to the data, we can't unilaterally decide to use it for a secondary purpose, and therefore I think that method has a question mark on it and whether it would really work. The question of whether ICANN is doing this today, I think, is completely irrelevant. What we have done today basically is respond to the world we were living in. The world changes, we know that, not only by GDPR, just because things change. And, saying that we're not doing it right now, therefore we don't need it, is akin to the old joke, sort of, you know, you decide whether you need a bridge in the middle across a river by putting a boat in the middle and seeing how much traffic there is. Well, there's not any traffic because there isn't a bridge. You can't use that as the gauge for whether you need the bridge or not. And the same thing here, you can't gauge whether we may need this in the future based on whether we needed it last week. And I think it would be foolish to not give ICANN the ability to do work to progress and address issues as they arise. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Go ahead, Christine.
Christina Rosette for the transcript. Just to put kind of a little finer point on it than Mark Anderson did, and to be clear, I'm not speaking for the registry stakeholder. This is not a registry stakeholder group position at this point. I am going to have real difficulties in going any further with consideration of this proposed purpose unless and until we get something in writing from Dan on behalf of ICANN Legal that basically says everything that Benedict has said about this purpose, what it's intended to do, what its scope is accurate and complete. We endorse it. And by the way, we're not going to try and use any adoption or proposal of this purpose as an indirect way to get data from contracted parties that they are not currently contractually obligated to provide. That's what I'm going to need to see before doing anything further with this. Thanks.
Thanks, Christina. That was to the point, but constructive too. Alan?
Everybody's feeling my thunder today, so thank you, Christina. No, Christina actually made my point very well. I think I just want to also add to it that, you know, I do applaud Benedict, and I see what he's trying to do from the transparency aspect of this. But again, when it comes to things such as research, I mean, it has not been a stated primary purpose of ICANN in the past. I agree with Mark. You are trying to create a new purpose out of this, and I think it makes it a lot more difficult a stance considering where we are and what we're trying to achieve in this particular PDP. So what I would suggest is, I mean, I would still think of it as being a primary or a secondary purpose. And just to say to Alan's point where he's saying, well, they don't have the data in the first place, the temporary specification actually removed their receipt of that data under the VRDA data. So, you know, it's a chicken and an egg type situation in this one. But then Christina's point is absolutely right. You know, there is no contractual obligation under this type of purpose for us to provide this data or transfer this data to ICANN for that purpose. So, you know, we're entering into a huge minefield here. So I just wholeheartedly support Christina and what Mark has said, but also to thank Benedict for, you know, putting this in paper and having this conversation with us.
Benedict, I see you've added yourself to the queue. Did you want to interject now, or can I march through the queue and I can wrap it?
I just wanted to ask Alan a question. I didn't understand what he said about BRDA, but also thank you for saying nice things. I know this is tricky. But, yeah, did you say that BRDA has been modified at some point?
Yeah, just under the temp spec, we have to now provide only thin BRDA and not thick BRDA. So basically ICANN removed the only source of data that they received in terms of the temp spec itself.
Okay, good to know. I was envisioning this as being transmitted. This scrambled data being transmitted along with the BRDA pack. So if that's been changed, then I need to have a rethink about that. Thank you very much.
Let's go ahead, Adia.
First off, I would like to say that I support Christina's comments and. I have two other comments. First, for those who say, why do we need this purpose? Why does this purpose need data? We have already established that this is what's being done, and that's the way this purpose is being achieved. To Mark's comment, how does this purpose relate to our work? Well, this purpose relates to the usage of WHO's data, and that's definitely within our mandate. But my third comment is that we also have in the purpose, it says that the findings will be published. And I think that would be beneficial not only to ICANN, but to other parties as well operating in the field. I have two questions to Benedict. I wonder why you did limit the, or why you put the wording in the purpose as the reports on threats. Why only threats? My understanding that reports could also work on advancing this area and not necessarily future threats. And my second question to Benedict is with regard to SIN registries, what about the SIN registries?
Benedict, do you want to respond?
Yeah, if you don't mind. Two quick questions, things I'd wondered about myself. Why did I just put threats? Because that's what I worry about. But I also, I think it would be a really good idea to include things like reports on country uptake, for example. You know, if a country isn't taking up domain names as much as its neighbours, that might be an interesting thing to ICANN to write a report about, and it could be achieved quite easily through the use of WHOIDS. You know, I'm open to opening that up, but I just wanted to be really careful that we're not opening the door to abuse to abuse of the system. Number two, sorry, remind me what your second question was.
It had to do with thin registries.
Oh yeah, I didn't want to pitch a technical implementation, and I think, but my gut feeling, if you're asking, is that this does sit better at registries rather than at registrars. But it could equally be implemented by registrars. My suggestion, in, if you look at the way that I've structured the data processing flows on sort of page three onwards, is that it be part, you know, be the registry pseudonymize the email address, et cetera, scramble it, and then pass it as part of its normal upload to ICANN, just the normal BRDA process. So it's just adding another element to that. And remember, there is already a contact object going up to ICANN, so this isn't a massive stretch from that. This is an existing function. It's not too, it shouldn't be too painful. Obviously, it doesn't, if we're doing it from registry, that doesn't include VeriSign, SIN registry. My feeling is that, you know, VeriSign's acknowledged that it's going to go thick at some point, so we just wait for that process. If that's something we still think is going to happen, and I hope it does, then let's wait for it.
Thanks.
Can I? I just want to interrupt the queue for a second, and because James is leaving, and he had, you know, I think we're going to wind up here with a collaboration with ICANN on this issue. But Dan or Tran, can you respond to the point where ICANN is on this, and then we'll talk about next steps later. But considering questions of collaboration on this, or if specific specific questions have been posed to the chief technical office, or what the state of play is on this, and then we'll go on to next things later. But I'd like to hear from one of you guys if you have something to say before James drops.
Credit Stan, can you hear me?
Yep, we can.
Okay. Thanks, Benedict, for bringing this up, and thanks to everybody. We want to, you know, support the discussion and support the team in any way we can on this, and appreciate, you know, I think everyone agrees that Benedict is kind of looking out for the common good here, and so we want to support that too. I think we did ask, there were earlier questions to ICANN.org on this general issue, and we answered one question, went back and consulted, you know, with the team and Octo. And then there was a follow-up question, and I think the answer, I'll try and speak up. Yes, thanks, Lindsay. The answer boiled down to a question of want versus need. I think Alan Greenberg put a really fine point on it about the his analogy with the bridge. You know, we don't currently have access to this data, and I think there's a sort of a hidden idea behind this, and it looks like, and Benedict seems like needs to maybe think this through, whether this purpose implies that there would have to be a new obligation on registries and registrars to hash all their data and then send all their data to ICANN. That requirement does not currently exist. It used to be the option for registries to send bulk data to ICANN, and we didn't require them in the past to strip out the contact data when they sent us the bulk registration data. Under the TEMP spec, that is now required. You know, there were GDPR issues with bundling up all of the contact data and sending it to ICANN. We told registries to stop doing that. So in order for this purpose to become operative, there would have to be a new obligation. Sounds like the idea on the table is that registries and maybe registrars would be required to hash all their data and send it to ICANN to conduct this this new purpose. And I think it really, you know, if we can go back to Octo, I think, Benedict said at the beginning, it'd be good for us to be able to go back and actually consult with them. You know, Trang and I can't speak for Octo here and see to what extent they, you know, this data would be useful to them to support their mission, which is to support ICANN's mission, to, you know, for the security and stability of the DNS in a nutshell. So we'd be happy, I think, take on if the team can wants to us to go back again to kind of come up with a written question. We'll take back and consult with the team on it. I think, though, too, there's still room for discussion from the team. Like I've heard it was Christina and a couple others have asked, you know, would ICANN.org support that? And so you're looking for an official ICANN.org position on whether or not we would, take on this purpose, and if we'd be willing to accept that new obligation if registries and registrars were going to be required to send us all this data in hashed form. I think, though, it's also fair for the team to consider whether, you know, like assume, arguendo, you want us to do this and we would accept that. Really, you know, our job is to kind of carry out the, implement the policies and carry out the wishes of the community as expressed these policy processes. So assume, you know, we would be willing to take that on. Does the team have an appetite to give ICANN all that data anyway? I think is the fair question. I've seen Lindsay and others raised questions about that in the first place, whether they want to give that data. So, again, thanks to Benedict. Fully support the discussion and want to support this, and we'd be happy to follow up with any written answers. Thanks, Kurt, and thanks, Benedict.
Thanks, Dan. Okay, let's see if we can march through the queue. Margie, please go ahead.
Sure. This is Margie. Regarding whether this is new, I think we heard from ICANN that before May 25th, they had access to the data. Now, granted, it wasn't coming through the you know, the channel we're talking about now. But and then I thought we asked them a question regarding whether it was helpful in helping facilitate the mitigation of some of the, you know, security incidents that have happened in the past. You know, I believe that Okto had, you know, works with different folks to, when something like, you know, some big malware thing happens. So this isn't new in that, from that perspective. What's I think different is that since May 25th, they haven't had access to the data, but before that they did. So I don't really look at this as something new, other than that perhaps the hash concept, which is more about implementation detail. I would support this. I think it's something we need to include as a specific purpose, and think it's important for you know, security and stability purposes. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Margie. Mark?
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson for the transcript. I'm trying to, you know, limit my comments to new things and not just reiterate what I've said before and what Alan and Christina have said. But, you know, this is, it's not clear to me that this is something that addresses a specific need and is something that ICANN is asking for. I heard Benedict, when he was talking, say, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we could do this? Wouldn't it be nice if we could do that? I don't look at that as what we should be doing here during this phase one, is sort of dreaming up new obligations for contracted parties to provide Okto with data that they might want to report on. This seems like a growth in scope. This seems like an overreach of the scope of the work of what we're supposed to be focused on, and that's GDPR compliance. It doesn't seem to me that something is broken here. And that there, that Okto is saying, I've not heard Okto come back and say, hey, there's something we need here to do our job that we had before May 25th, and now we don't have. Please, working group, fix this for us. I'm not hearing that being said. So, I don't look at this working group as just a blank piece of paper to do anything and everything with RDS. That is what Next Gen RDS was. That was a pretty wide open scope to look at anything and everything related to RDS. Our scope is a bit narrower, and I think there may likely need to be follow-on PDPs to address some of the broader scope items that were part of NextGen RDS, but were overcome by GDPR. This seems like a distraction from the work we should be focused on. I think it's maybe a nice idea and well intended, but I think it's a distraction. It's not solving an immediate need. And I think we'd be better off focusing strictly on the issues that are necessary and core to our charter and moving on from this one. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mark. I feel a little bit like the loaves and the fishes here. I drew a line under the queue and somehow it's magically grown. Let's try to keep our comments to something that hasn't been said before, and because I think I know where we're going to go. So, Caboose, please.
Yes, I agree with you. I fully agree with Mark and many others that say that we are not clear about this purpose. I don't reject that at this stage, but I defer consideration until you have sufficient clearance what we are talking about, what is the justification of that, any consequences intended or unintended consequences, and any possible potential coverage using this purpose for some other things. So just we devote another I don't know, half an hour, 45 minutes discussion at the next time, whatever time would be, and then try to, I'm not clear to accept that. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Benedict, I'm going to give you the last word, so I'm going to go to Mark S. first.
Thanks, Kurt. Mark S. V. I agree with the comments that, the actual usage and the need of ICANN or OCTO or however you scope it does need to be clarified. But I always thought that we had been asked, and we are in the initial report, the question, are there any purposes missing? And so concerned that, we haven't felt this before, that's totally fair, but the fact that we haven't talked about it before, I don't think that automatically makes it out of scope. We have a question, are there any purposes missing? If we conclude that this is a missing purpose, then I think it is within our scope. So I'm open to comments on that, but that's my opinion. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Mark. Okay, Benedict, you can close, and then I'll take up home if you don't mind.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you, everybody, for listening and giving it, good faith consideration. I know that it's contentious, but I really appreciate the person who said, this is coming from the place of trying to do the right thing. That's our aim. I'll say one last thing, which is illustrative. As some of you know, I've been working with several of you over the last couple of weeks. We've been taking down an organised crime gang for the third year running. What's been different this year is it's been really hard to distinguish the domains that are owned by innocent people. Because of the loss of some of this data, we've dealt with 850,000 domain names across 40 TLDs. So it's a huge amount of data. Picking the sort of good, the legitimate, the false positives, the crossovers out of that data has been a lot harder because of the redaction. So I think I'd encourage you to all be mindful of the sort of unintended consequences of what we're doing, and maybe have a system where we can rely more on ICANN to do some of this work rather than sort of outsourcing it to random third parties like me. That's what I'm envisioning here. I think that this is a situation where ICANN is taking more of an active role in cybersecurity, because this is the new reality we're in. So thank you very much all for listening.
Thanks, Benedict, and thank you very much everybody for investing a lot of time in this discussion. I think the bottom line is that. A lot more coordination is needed with ICANN, first to understand the purpose, the specifics about the purpose more perfectly, and well, more perfectly is wrong, but more exactly, and not only the purpose for which the data will be processed and the benefits of it, but also the risks, right, and the costs. So, I listened to, I think Christina put it best, but we'd want to hear from ICANN directly and probably from David Conrad directly about the program and the benefits of it, and then get enough into the implementation details to understand that it wouldn't inflict any material costs on contracted parties, but rather ICANN could take up the extra tasks in some way, and then understand about safeguarding data and understand how the data would be analyzed in the form of reports and what would be made public. So, and then how the lawful basis 6.1F attaches to to those things? Do they does it attach on a study by study basis or universally? So quite a bit has to be worked out for us to get to the point to where we understand the lawfulness and also the costs and benefits involved in this. So clearly, you know, from a long time ago in the discussion, I think we all recognize that close coordination with ICANN and having them become a proponent of this is required for us to get behind this purpose. And, you know, Dan and Trang are our liaisons, but and if it's okay with them, you know, I'd strongly urge, you know, Benedict and any others to get in front of David Conrad and have a conversation. And, you know, there's some hard digging to be done to get this over the line if you want to, and that's the sort of work that needs to be done. So I would suggest that you know, we don't bury this, but we pend it out until Benedict and ICANN can have the right people in front of us with you know, the backing of this purpose and some implementation thoughts or details how it can be done in a what I would call a cost-free or risk-free way, either, even though it's not free but low. So I think that's where we are, and I think also, you know, I also agree with Mark though. You know, we're supposed to be identifying additional purposes, and this is a purpose. So so I think that's where we are, and I'm just going to look at the chat for a second or if anybody disagrees with me. Okay, great. So I think that's where we are. And Benedict, I'm happy to talk with you after after this call sometime, and maybe we can coordinate with Dan and Trang and set up the right set of meetings to provide the additional information, if that's all right with you. Okay, so we're out of. I'm assuming that's a retired hand, Mark. So I'm just going to keep plunging ahead. So the next item in the agenda is the discussion about who is accuracy in ARS. And, you know, so I think that, you know, we're obviously going to take this up in the next meeting. You know, in the previous meeting, we asked Margie and Alan to lead off the discussion with, you know, the objectives for this group in that discussion. You know, and how it hooks into the temp spec and the charter. But what are our objectives? And you know, what'd be great is however brief it is, who's interested in having a specific outcome on these issues, if you could put it in writing in some way, so we'd have something to chew on. You know, I'm concerned with the time we're taking, and it's part, you know, on some of these topics, and it's partially my management. But I think we want to get to the nuts and bolts and what the goals of this topic are. So, Margie, Alan, and anyone else, under this heading, if we could identify with the sorts of the objective but the sorts of outcomes we're looking for from this group, I think that'd be really helpful for our discussion. Alan.
Kurt, what I was going to suggest is if I could take a couple of minutes and go into the history of what the accuracy reporting system is and why we have it. That may be a good primer for those who are not have not spent a fair amount of their life looking at that, as perhaps sadly I have over the last year or so.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay, thank you. Among the recommendations from the first WHOIS review team, going back to 2011 or so, was noting that studies had been done looking at the accuracy of WHOIS contact data and noting that there appeared to be very significant problems with it. The WHOIS review team made several recommendations, one that we should, that ICANN should annually report on how accurate the data was. So in other words, institute regular reviews to understand how the situation was changing. Moreover, they also recommended a recommendation that ICANN put in place processes to reduce the failure rate by very significant amounts, probably unrealistic amounts. Part of the process that ICANN instituted was to build this accuracy reporting system. It took a while to do, and there were a number of phases. Currently, the process was, prior to GDPR, that twice a year, about 100,000 domain names were sampled, and from that, a subset was picked out, again, randomly, but to making sure that we had geographic coverage and GTLD coverage that was statistically significant for all, all significant areas. So from that sample, we end up taking 12,000 names and subjecting them to a number of tests to see whether they meet accuracy requirements. We don't actually try them. The email ones, I believe, are validated to make sure that they actually are addressed. We don't send paper mail or make telephone calls. However, those are just syntactically checked. Based on the results, the ones that do not meet the cut are submitted to contractual compliance. Currently, the numbers that we are seeing is slightly under 40% of the 12,000 sample domain names have problems. So it's not that there's a small tail end of domains that aren't accurate or aren't potentially accurate. We're talking about 40%, and the number is actually increasing, not decreasing. And since the data is not going to be visible until it is made available under the various legal purposes that we're looking at, it's quite clear that right now the data is not particularly accurate on a global scale, but it's going to be less and less possible to even determine how accurate it is, never mind how inaccurate it is. In other words, we don't have any measure unless we can continue running this program. And since it was mandated by reviews that we instituted under the then AOC, now under the bylaws, the board approved it, and the numbers indicate that the first Who Is review team was correct. There is a problem, and it doesn't seem to be fixed just because of the new accuracy requirements that we have put on in the RAA. I don't see how we can turn our back on it and say we won't do it anymore. It's not relevant. I believe this is an exceedingly relevant issue that we cannot ignore. And the kinds of methodology that Benedict was talking about for the research would apply to this as well. It's a different group within ICANN, but it's still within ICANN. And I believe it's something that we need to look at in some depth. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. That was good. Stephanie? We can't quite hear you yet, Stephanie.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Wonderful. Stephanie Perrin for the record. When you are evaluating accuracy, one of the first things you have to ascertain is the impact of the inaccuracy. I have said before, previously, that I've never seen in government a situation where somebody could lose permanently a valuable asset for not changing their address within 3 weeks of moving. In my view, the accuracy at ICANN is disproportionate to the actual impact of inaccuracy. if you can't contact someone and you have to go back to the registrar who has contact information because they have billing data and they actually get paid, what is the downside to that? How many arrests were not made because you couldn't contact people? Why would you introduce new costs, thus nullifying one of your key mission objectives at ICANN, namely to make the Internet available to everybody? Why would you drive costs up if there hasn't been measurement of the negatives? So I just want to say, A, we're off topic here, and B, accuracy needs a whole lot of work before you start imposing burdens on the system to cover accuracy that is not necessary for mission purposes. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephanie. I think, so first, you know, I agree with all the points you're making, and you're asking really hard questions that will get us off course. And I think, you know, I think the way for us to handle this is to say that this was an ongoing program that was approved, and if it was, you know, I think we have to make the assumption it was approved for some good reason. And so we should see if it can be retained without undue costs or burdens to contracted parties or risk of exposing personal data to the outside, you know, those sorts of things. So I'm not for inventing new things, I don't think, but I'm, you know, since this was, I'm kind of, you know, if this was something that we're doing right now, if there's a way we can continue to do it easily, you know, we should look at that. So I think, you know, we're out of time for the meeting. I'll let, you know, Hadia, Lindsay, and Mark go ahead, and then I got a couple of things I got to say. So I need a couple minutes, you guys.
So thank you, Stephanie, for that. I would just like to mention one of the impacts of being inaccurate. So one of the impacts of that is being not compliant with the GDPR, because Article 5 of the GDPR speaks about the personal data and addresses the accuracy component in its first paragraph, stating that personal data should be accurate and that reasonable steps should be taken to ensure that personal data is accurate, having regard to the for which they are processed. In addition, paragraph 2 of the same article says that the controller is responsible for complying with paragraph 1, which includes the accuracy item, and that the controller is accountable in this regard. So that's another impact. Thank you.
Thanks, Hadia. Lindsay?
Hi, this is Lindsay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Because I've had problems before. Great. Thanks. I suppose my question is, I'm not entirely sure why we're bringing up the topic of accuracy. As it's already been said, we already have this in our contracts. For us as registrars and registries, we need to have that so we can bill, contact our customers, registrants, etc. It's a term of our terms and conditions that the data they put in must be accurate. So, again, I'm not quite sure where this is going and why we keep bringing up accuracy. We've already got sort of stuff in place to deal with that, and I'm not sure where else we're going with this. And it's of concern that there's going to be even more put on the contracted parties when we're doing as much as we can. Even under Article 5 of GDPR, it says every reasonable step must be taken. So I think we don't want to sort of go mad on this and certainly put the onus on the contracted parties to do more. Thank you very much.
Hello, I am on audio bridge. If you allow me, I have 1 minute comment.
Yerzad had to unmute himself. Go ahead, Cavus.
Yes, I think this EPDP team is not going to solve the old problem of the ICANN. This who is accuracy is a long, long time ago on the table, and why it is put on our shoulder. We have sufficient problems, difficulties, and so on and so forth, and we are not in the capacity or in the time to deal with all of these issues. I think there are other entities, other bodies in the ICANN, they can do that. They were doing that, this review team or another review team. So why we have to concentrate on this, who is data accuracy? We just qualify whatever data we have in the sense that they are, we just protect those data if we can. But we are not dealing with the accuracy as such because there are so many other problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. Mark, are you still in the queue? Yep.
I can go quickly. Mark, as we for the record, I just wanted to make a comment to Stephanie's point about adding new costs. I would guess that very few people on this call actually know what the current costs are. I had a conversation with a vice president of VeriSign in Barcelona regarding a very recent investigation, Microsoft and the police department of Lower Saxony, where we had to go to VeriSign and work directly with them because, data inaccuracy and lack of responsiveness from the registrar. And, that's a cost on VeriSign. And this vice president had never even heard of it. And he disputed that it happened because, he's a thin registry. But it did happen. So, don't be so quick to assume that these things are not going on right now in a lawful fashion over and over and over again. You may not have been exposed to it. We do expect that these costs will go up, of course, because of data redaction.
Thanks. So that sets the stage. So I think forewarned is forearmed, Margie, and that's why I was thinking of writing it, if we're going to have a writing, and I think you responded positively to that, and the chat will help us keep the discussion appropriately narrow and focused on certain desired objectives. Benedict.
That's the case that I was working on, and we don't tell everybody in VeriSign what's going on, because it's done on a need to know basis. So I think it's a little bit of a stretch to point the finger at the SIN registry, because criminals have targeted them. I don't.
No, it's not to point a finger. It's to just point that the information is not necessarily widely spread, and people may be not clear on the burdens that they already carry.
So I think we shouldn't talk about that anymore. Do you have anything else you want to add, Benedict?
All good. Thanks very much.
Yep. Thanks, Benedict. So in addition to those things, so there's some more homework assignments I'm going to pile on right at the end of the meeting, and I apologize for that, so don't hang up yet. But there were a couple of other topics in our list of remaining topics that the support team distributed. And so there's some topics on the end of that. So similarly, when we get to those, whoever the proponent of those topics was, or anybody who agrees with the addition of those topics that should be discussed with some content added to the final report to address those issues, to provide what the specific hoped for result is, or the objective in some sort of writing, that would be really helpful for our discussion, because we're staring at a line or a couple of sentences in the list of things to do that don't appropriately flesh out the topics. So we'll put a point on those in an email to everybody so you understand what those additional topics are. And I want to resurrect an old something from several weeks ago that we discussed, and that was the registrar and registry's responsibilities in processing data. It was something we were going to try to get done for the initial report, but kind of left to the last minute, so it couldn't be done. But remember when we discussed the temporary specifications and the registrar and registry responsibilities that were listed in, I think it's sections 5, 6, and 7 of the temporary specifications. The contracted parties stated, and I think we all pretty much agreed that they were, those were sort of overly prescriptive requirements. You know, guidelines would be okay, requirements probably not. And that there was more than one way to skin that cat. And so some of the contracted parties recommended that a more lightweight set of requirements that allowed contracted parties to address GDPR requirements in different ways should be developed. And so I remember Christina volunteered to head up some writing on that, but I'm kind of staring at her and all the contracted parties and asking them if they would take a look at those sections in the temp spec. And yes, you did. Remember, unless you were saying yes to something else in the chat when I brought it up. But anyway, I think it would be, it's addressed to a certain extent in the initial report, but I think it's good if we replaced what's in the temp spec with what we think is appropriate. You know, I think the contracted parties would. So since nobody remembers but me, I'll put this in an email out and describe the issue again. Just watching the chat. Okay. So so that's the end of that. And so we have some stuff to do over the week. I'm going to chat with Benedict offline to see if we can move forward on the discussion of his purpose. And we'll get the agenda out for the next meeting. So thanks very much, everybody, for getting on the call, and I'll see you guys next week.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. As the operator, if you could please stop all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.